The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome aboard. We're all heading on board, in fact, to Admiral Harry Cooper's flagship, the USS SharkHunters.com. And we're going to learn tonight more of the secrets of World War II and post-World War II history as it pertains to the haven in South America, the deal that was made between the U.S. and then the Third Reich to spare an awful lot of the upper echelon political figures, and scientists and engineers most especially. They got so much in return for allowing these people to go to South America. Not even funny. But Harry has been after this for a long time, and thanks to him and his books, we understand so much. It's there for us now. It didn't used to be, but now we have the option, if people are so inclined, to actually find out what the hell happened. We have FBI documents. We have all kinds of things. We're going to look at a number of different pieces of information tonight, images and documents and things as we look at our photos with Harry. Welcome back, Admiral.
Good evening.
I'll take your word for that.
Hey, this is Florida. It's a good evening. It's beautiful weather. We don't have lockdowns. We don't have masks. We don't have lunatic blue state governors. Don't have to dodge bullets here like they do in my old hometown, Chicago.
Got it. Can you sing Chicago for us?
If I sing, you'll lose all your audience.
Nah. They'd like it.
Yeah, well, I could have
been a lead singer
if I sang in the choir.
You could have been a lead singer with the Titanic Orchestra.
Yeah, right. You know, the darndest thing, we've had musical talent in my family all the way down. My great-grandfather was an opera teacher. The daughter of the Kaiser was one of his pupils when he lived in Vienna. My grandfather had a doctorate in music, played first violin in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra more than 100 years ago. My dad could play all the brass instruments, guitar, banjo, the piano, the organ. He had a beautiful singing voice. Me, I can play a record player. That's it. I used to play bagpipes, okay.
What about the kazoo? I heard that. You were good with the kazoo.
Yeah. There was a kid's show when I was a kid called Rudy Kazooty. and I used to play a kazoo. I even, when I was a Cub Scout, they showed us how to make a kazoo out of a piece of paper and a comb.
And a comb. And people are going to think right now, what the hell's a comb? What's he talking about?
Yeah,
a comb.
Right. Yeah.
Seriously. There are people listening right now who don't know what a comb
paper.
Is.
Yeah, I know.
That too.
I know. Yeah, hey, my son, God bless him, the one that was killed when he was 20. When he was a little kid, I told him, hey, if you're naughty, Santa Claus is going to put coal in your stockings. And he says, what's coal, Daddy? I had to tell him it's a black rock that burns.
Yeah.
And now we're in a situation where if your kid's having a birthday party, you don't dare buy any balloons. Or if you do, you can't let them loose. Or Joe and the hoe will send up the F-22s to shoot your balloons down.
Well, you have to get a little, I guess, some kind of a gas to helium or whatever to make them float.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that. Remember you used to always see balloons with strings going up? You'd be out and about wherever you are, and some kid would let his balloon go, and he, wah, wah, and there goes the balloon.
Yep.
I don't even think they sell those anymore. Maybe they do.
Oh, of course they do. I've got three balloons bouncing around in my office right now, tied to my beer stein for Valentine's Day. My wife gave them to me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
She's a great lady.
Okay. Well, I believe that. I mean, look at
she
you.
She has to be to put up with me.
Where the hell would you be without her? All right.
Absolutely
now,
correct.
We have a lot of information to get through. Let's kind of move that direction because I want to bring everybody along. This is fun because what Harry Cooper has is material, information, documents, data, records that no one else on the planet has, no one, and it'll be stolen from, no doubt, by some of these television history channel types or whatever they are.
Yeah, I know.
They always somehow manage to, they forget to give Harry Cooper and SharkHunters.com credit, but they have
they
no problem
taking
it. They
don't dare give credit because then they'll have to send a check.
And that would be the least they should do anyway. Hell, you're keeping a lot of those people literally in a career. Think about it.
Yeah, I know that.
It's true.
We used to help produce shows for the History Channel way back when it was the History Channel, and we got credit for it. We didn't get paid for it, but we got credit. And now most people don't realize it's not even the History Channel anymore. Its legal name is History, and years ago was bought out by A&E, which in turn I think is owned by Disney, but I'm not sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
And I tried to contact the CEO of History way back when that Hunting Hitler farce first came out, because it was taken from a book that reads an awful lot like my book. The good-looking broad was the CEO of History, and never even gave me a... she never come back to me, but she had one of her flunkies, because I had listed a whole lot of errors. And one of her flunkies came back and said, we have run it past our fact checkers. Fact checkers? Who the hell knows this subject better than
like they
we
were,
do?
They were alive 100 years ago, and they have all that information to build upon and draw from and deduce reality? I don't think so.
Yeah, amen. So, you know, what do they care? They're rolling in the dough.
They don't care. It's all showbiz and money. It's worse than ever.
There's you're more familiar with it than me because you were on a much higher level in the broadcast business than I was.
Well, it's you know why I quit. I walked away. I just wouldn't participate in it. I'm not going to do that to my own honor system. I have morality. I could see where it was going. I walked.
If you get to a situation where you can't look at the guy in the mirror, you got to make some changes. Okay,
no.
You're trying to get me back on topic, aren't you?
Well, when I look in the mirror, I see two or three people. What's that mean?
I don't know. I have to ask my daughter. She's the psychiatrist. Psychologist, I'm sorry.
Whatever. Okay, now, I'm trying to count the pictures. I thought there were more pictures than these. Three, Six, eight, no. 24, 27 pictures. Okay, that's about
right. Yeah, I cut it short a little bit this time because the last time we had a lot more pictures, and we get deeper and deeper into detail, and we still had a bunch of pictures left over last show that we didn't get to because we're getting into heavy detail. You'll notice this one, I'm only focusing on a handful of chapters, not the whole book.
Right.
Because for those of you who can't see, we'll be gone otherwise.
For those of you not online, there are 27 pictures. 26 of them are pictures of Cooper. other than that, it's going to be a fun program. I'm just kidding. He has been involved in so many things and has been blessed to know so many extraordinary historical figures. It's amazing. Tell our listeners, again, who may be new to the program, where the baseline of this information is coming from.
What's the what, the baseline?
What is that noise I hear?
I don't know. I'm shutting the door to my office.
All right.
Pasha thinks she ought to go out, and I'm not in a position to take her out right now.
I see.
For those of you who don't know, Asha is my son's 70-pound husky. Okay, so what was your question?
You might want to tell people about Don Angel.
Oh, Don Angel, what a great guy.
As a prelude, because most of this data, or a lot of it, came from him.
And yeah,
a
he
hell
was
of a
the
lot
foundation
more.
Of the whole
yes.
research into the spook world.
Without Don Angel, yeah. By the
Don
way,
Angel,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, there's much more information that Don Angel had assembled that we can't get. Harry can't get. Shouldn't speak like that. And maybe someday we'll get more. There's more. Anyhow, what we have now is a treasury, but there's more. So go ahead.
There's so much more here. Jeff, I was going through back issues of the magazine, which incidentally your listeners can get a free copy of our magazine if you want. Just send an email to sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. Say you heard the show, and we'll send you electronically. We'll send you the current issue of the KTV magazine. Now, Angel Alcazar de Velasco joined Shark Hunters in 1985. He was an agent, spy, whatever you want to call it. He was a Spaniard, but he worked for the Third Reich. And he wrote me a letter, typewritten, single-spaced, 114 pages long, in which he told the story of Hitler's escape, if you want to call it an escape. Hitler, according to him, Hitler was ready to just die in the bunker, but Bormann had Hitler and Eva Braun, who was then Eva Hitler, had them forcibly drugged and removed from the Führer bunker, and Don Angel saw it. And so obviously Hitler and Eva did not commit suicide in the bunker. They lived out their lives in South America.
We might want to add, Harry, the person that was that looked like Hitler, who was shot and otherwise passed off as Hitler.
Yeah, he was one of the doppelgangers. That was Hitler's cousin, a guy named Joseph Silip, S-I-L-I-P, who the SS found in 1944. He was Hitler's cousin. He looked just like Hitler, and he was from the same area, so he spoke with the same unique
dialect.
Austrian dialect, right. And I always have to laugh at people. They show me the picture, you know, and they say, yeah, he shot himself in the right temple, which is what the fake history says. He shot himself in the right temple. And yet here's a dead body with a bullet hole right in his forehead. Well, that ain't the right temple.
No one questions that. And it's appalling how people just accept. They're told they accept. It is bizarre.
I think what it is, I don't think people are that stupid. Well, some are. But I think it's just the fact that it's not so critically important to them that they want to really dig into it. You know, Hitler's death, allegedly 1945, in reality 1962, that's ancient history. They don't don't even teach World War II in our high schools anymore. So it's not something that you would look into quite like the criminality of the Kenyan gay boy or Joe and the Ho or so many others. That's right now. That's affecting people. People might...
You mean the...
Might,
the you're trying to say the faggot Oreo cookie president that we had? Is that what you were trying to say?
Mein Name ist Hasse, ich lebe in der Wald und ich kenne nicht. My
you
name is Rabbit,
nothing.
I live in the woods and I don't know nothing.
Anyway.
I'll send, if you got a strong stomach, I'll send you a copy of a photo somebody just sent me with those two people wearing next to nothing in a kayak. But I'll make sure I don't send it after you've eaten because you'll lose your lunch.
Oh, I've seen pictures of that guy in various states of undress. And
yeah, I know. It turns your stomach. Anyhow, Don Angel laid the groundwork, and he and I never met him. He didn't speak English. I don't do Spanish. But we wrote back and forth quite a bit, and he not only gave me the foundation of Hitler's escape, he also gave me threads going out to this topic, that topic, and the other topic, which we have followed along through other SIG agents, S-E-I-G, which means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group. Counting total, those who have passed on, probably two dozen agents. Some were incredible researchers, like Pizarro, whose father was killed in the war, to guys like the one we call Rembrandt, who was an actual agent in Dutch Secret Service, etc. So we've gotten so much information, and I'm trying to get out from under the administrative part of what I'm doing here so I can just focus on writing books, because that stuff is here. And if I don't get it down on books by the time I check out, it's going to be gone forever, and I can't let that happen. So I ain't going to die. I had a meeting yesterday morning with my VA doctor, and my PSA was up a little bit. He said, "Well, you probably got prostate cancer." I said,
bullshit.
"I don't want to hear that."
No, and, bullshit. Excuse me,
yeah.
I'm calling bullshit on that. PSA tests have been proven not to work. You want me to send you the data?
No,
seriously,
I believe what you
work.
Tell me, because I know you researched that stuff.
Yep.
So I said I want a prostate biopsy. He said, "Well, the VA is under orders not to do that for somebody my age." He said, "But you're in pretty good health. You got at least 10 more years ahead of you." I said, "I got 23 more years ahead of me, because that's the promise I made. I'll be 110, then I'm going to check out. By then, I got to have all this stuff on paper."
Oh, you owe us a lot. So, yeah, I agree. You're not.
I know,
going
all
anywhere.
Those veterans, they gave me all their memories. They never asked a damn dime for it, like so many people would do. These German veterans realized that I was giving them back their honor, putting forth the true story of their history. They were honorable, decent fighters, and
yes,
they were not the
yes.
raving baby killers that you read about. That makes nice propaganda, but it just ain't true.
It's not true in the least. No.
Right.
There are always exceptions in every army. I don't care. But generally speaking, the honor and dignity of military history was carried on the shoulders of most of those men in the German mm-hmm. military, in the Navy, the Air Force. I don't care what branch of the service. Au contraire, when you talk about the other fighting forces in the war, they didn't have it. The Prussian discipline and morality was never forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Just remember, it was a Prussian general with a whole mess of Prussian troops who came over to the what was the brand new United
That's
States.
That's right. Saved our anyway.
Ass. Go ahead. You can say it.
All right. I was going to say
moving
bacon.
Along.
But, Okay.
Anyhow, getting on to...
It's true. Now, hold on. I don't know if we have a break coming up here, but I'm going to pass it. We've got things to do. The history of Germany as extended into South America and multiple countries. Uruguay,
yes.
Bolivia, Paraguay, Colombia, Chile. Brazil, Chile, they all of them. But primarily Argentina and probably what would be number two?
Paraguay.
Probably, yeah, because Stroessner, they put him in there, and he was president forever.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Anyhow, we have so much down there. This is a series, of a volume of books, or a huge DVD set, whatever, that maybe one day Harry can put together, the whole story of South America after and at the end of the war. Go ahead. This is always fascinating. Real history. The truth.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a way. And I'm as computer stupid as they come.
Me too.
We've got over 250,000 photographs in umpty zillion different categories, and I'd like to find a way to get them all up on some kind of a rotating show or whatever, where somebody clicks on and you see photo one for 5 seconds, then it clicks to photo two for 5 seconds, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
We had a nice deal with YouTube, but then I think it was the Spitlickers, the Southern Poverty Law Center, complained to them, and they just took my entire channel off the air and said I could never have a YouTube channel again. You know, so we have a member now who's not really a member. That member doesn't want to get on a list, but that member is going to pick up the baton and start posting all our stuff on Rumble and on BitChute.
Well, all they need to do is post all of the programs that we've ever done on either one of those channels, and there will be the library. There will be the library of history. All of each program with all the visuals to complement it, and there you go.
Okay, I'll be on the emails tomorrow, because after I get off the air with you, I'm going to walk the dog, and then I'm going to go to bed. Because
the dog's going to walk you. That's you got it.
Oh,
backwards.
I know. Just a now, powerful dog.
Yeah.
A great dog.
Hey, seriously,
so good with my son.
You have my full permission, of course, to post every one of them on there in a coherent fashion. Make sure who does it includes the visuals for each program,
right,
so people can go and listen and learn and watch and see.
Super.
Yeah, that'll be a magnificent contribution to the truth.
I appreciate your thoughts, and we will do it.
Yeah, good. All right. Okay, onward.
Onward.
All right, let's go to picture number one, friends, and that's top left, first row, Hidden Secrets of World War II. This is volume two. Now, what we have is, for those of you not online, we've got an FBI document. It's somewhat redacted, and it's, I don't know what the top one is. I can't make that out. It's a little difficult for me. But there's the bottom one I can read. You go ahead and read it if you want. It's yours. I can read it either. It doesn't matter.
Let me click it up here, see if I can get it bigger.
I can't read the top one.
I could before I put it up there, but I can't remember what. It all pertains to Hitler living in South America, and they spelled his first name A-D-O-L-P-H, which is misspelling. It's A-D-O-L-F.
Yeah.
But that's what it is on the front page, on the front cover, just to give an idea of what you're going to find inside.
Right. Here's the front page of an FBI report. And it says, synopsis of facts. And then there's something that's redacted. The next words are reports contact with, and they spell the name out, and it says phonetic. So the first line obviously says synopsis of facts, and then it says someone's name, an agent, reports contact with, and they had to use phonetics, probably a German name, claims to have aided six top Argentina officials in hiding Adolf Hitler upon his landing by submarine, we'll talk more about that in a minute, in Argentina. Hitler reported to be hiding out in foothills of southern Andes. Well, I think most of you regulars know that means Inalco. Information obtained by redacted, from redacted, unable to be verified because of redacted disappearance. Attempts to locate somebody, negative. No record of him in police or INS files. So they were looking for probably a German national who was involved with this. So there it is right there. Now that's 1945, September of 45. This is FBI.
Right.
So Hoover knew in September of 45 that Hitler was possibly living in the foothills of Argentina in the Andes. So that's very
interesting. Which is exactly where he was living.
That's right.
He didn't get there by submarine. When U-530 and U-977 surrendered 3 months after the war ended down there in Mar del Plata, Otto Wermuth, the skipper of U-530, who was also a member of Shark Hunters, and we communicated, he said that was the best camouflage possible for Hitler coming in, because Hitler came in by that big JU-390 aircraft. And so Otto Wermuth says those two submarines were the best camouflage. Everybody was determined to find Hitler or some trace of Hitler on board those submarines, which, of course,
right.
they couldn't because he wasn't on the submarines.
Right.
And those two books that came out after mine that read a lot like my book, they said that he went away on U-530, which is sheer idiocy. He was seen in the Führer bunker on the 20th of April, his birthday.
Yeah.
And on the 20th of April, U-530 was already 3 days out to sea on a combat mission. They went to New York trying to sink ships. Fortunately, they did not.
Mm-hmm.
But then they decided to go to Chile and got down in far southern Atlantic, and the weather was so bad they ran short of fuel, so they surrendered in Argentina. But you know, he did not come. The man was claustrophobic, almost fatal claustrophobic, and he got seasick at the drop of a hat. So to think he'd spend 2 months or so in a smelly old steel tube bouncing around on the ocean, it's just ludicrous.
That was the story, though, and that was the misdirection that they laid out there to better protect what was really going on. And
right, exactly.
By the way, we actually know the name of the pilot of that big six-engine Junkers, which had flown probably all around the world, the Northern Hemisphere, for quite a while.
During the war, it was flying over the top of the world to Japan, landing in the Sakhalin Islands. We've shown photos of that and all the fuel drums that are still there with Wehrmacht markings on them.
I want one. Damn it.
I can't help you there. It's Russian-owned now, and even though I have all my Russian documentation, right now Russia probably is not too happy with the United States.
Well, can you blame them? I mean,
no, I don't
literally
blame them
forcing
a
them into a nuclear war footing, which they are on right now.
Yeah.
And this thing theoretically could ignite. As they said today, the Russian top level in Moscow said that the U.S. and NATO have crossed every single red line we have drawn. Everyone.
So I know.
They have it all.
And I have to just grimace every time I see some knothead on television talk about Putin being a madman. He's not a madman. I met him. I spent 15 minutes talking to him. He's a tough, honorable Russian patriot. Not a madman.
He's probably one of the greatest diplomats of our age.
He swallowed an awful lot of insults and didn't react like he could have.
Yep. Okay, so this first one is, again, documentation that the FBI was notified. They had agents. They were gathering data on Adolf Hitler in 1945, and by September 21st, 1945, what's that, April, May, June, July, August, September, 6 months after he allegedly was dead, he was reported to be very much alive, living in the foothills of the Andes in Argentina. Okay, that's that document.
Right.
And remember the other document where, I don't know if you have it. I've seen it, and I think we've shared it, but Hitler was the subject of another document that instructed J. Edgar Hoover to cease immediately all efforts to locate Adolf Hitler and anyone else from the Third Reich in South America. Ordered him to stop.
I don't have that document, but I saw it, and that was middle 1947.
Right. No, they called the FBI off. They said stop, because the treaty or an agreement or the contract, whatever you want to call it, it was signed between the Third Reich government and the American government, had to be honored. Or we're going to lose a lot. We didn't have all the technology yet. We didn't have all the technicians and engineers and scientists yet. They were en route coming over in Operation Paperclip. That's what the deal was. We exchanged technology for the freedom of, what, maybe 10, 20,000? Who knows how many? And I do know somebody.
Not only that, all the scientific leaps forward that Germany had made, we got them. Otherwise, it could have gone to the Soviets.
Well, that's right. And we ended up with a program called NASA that was led by, from 1962 to 1973, by Dr. Kurt Debus in Florida. The director of NASA was Hitler's director of rocketry at Peenemünde all during the war, Dr. Kurt Debus, who came over here as part of Paperclip, actually higher level than that, I believe, with Wernher von Braun, his number one, and they ran the American space program. It was all German. Hans Kammler was there. They were all here. They didn't get killed over there. They got him out of there. That was the prize of the war, German technology.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, in this book, we talk about Kammler and all the different ways he was killed. He killed himself, his bodyguard killed him, and then the chief of that guard detachment killed the bodyguard, and then, you know, it was a circular firing squad or whatever, you know, and then, oh, no, he popped up somewhere else and somebody else killed him, and, you know, it's a lot like Hitler dying in a bunker.
Well, Bormann dying in a tank or on a tank.
Yeah,
right?
By the train station.
Yeah.
And Fegelein, too. Fegelein lived through it.
Yeah.
That's in the book, too.
It's amazing. Who flew into Germany and tried to talk Hitler into leaving, and he refused? And that's why Bormann had to drug him, apparently.
Yeah, that was Hannah Reich.
Yeah.
Great lady. Just a great... They outfitted a V-1... buzz bomb with a cockpit and controls in two different times. She flew one of them V-1 buzz bombs without a warhead, of course. She also, she landed in Berlin to take him out at a place called the Avos, which is a racetrack. And he wouldn't go. So she went out with her boyfriend, Robert Ritter von Greim, and he took a few bullets during the ground fire during takeoff, and he surrendered. I think it was Salzburg, and then he wound up killing himself. She was looked on as
a great heroine. She flew out of there with her boyfriend, and the plane took heavy ground fire, and he was hit a couple times, several times, and she wasn't, and yet she came. Wow. See, that's an incredible history.
She was a tiny little thing. It would have been hard to hit her. She was only about 4'11", 5 foot tall, something like that. But later on, we have some pictures that were done from the air in Brazil and Paraguay from her plane in 1947. She was down there flying around. She was received in the U.S. later on by the U.S. Air Force, the Army Air Corps at the time, and she was treated as a heroine because she was a great pilot.
Right.
Tough lady.
Yeah. And do remember that, for those of you who are kind of new to this maybe and don't understand, that the evil Nazi party, at most 1 out of 10 members of the German military in World War II were members of the party. It just wasn't an issue. It was not like the commissars, the communist commissars, the Marxist Bolshevik communist commissars in the in the Red Army. Yeah, they had one for every 50 tribes, I don't know how many. And if they dared stop advancing, they got shot in the back. It's a whole different thing. So this was a patriotic war. I know they call it a patriotic war for the Soviet Union, but it's not the same.
Well, that's how they call it. They don't call it World War II. They call it the Great Patriotic War.
Right.
I've been through the Red Army Museum several times over there, and surprisingly, the U.S., England had nothing to do with the war. The U.S. sent them a couple airplanes, but that's it, according to the Red Army Museum.
Right, right. All right. Okay, picture number two, table of contents.
Yeah, I thought I'd throw that in this time so that everybody knows what the heck we're talking about here and they can follow along. Follow the bouncing ball.
All right, now, which book is this?
This is volume two.
Okay, this is the new one. I just want to be sure we have that straight.
We did the last one in the last show.
Yeah, we can give people now, right now, contact data so you can get volume one and volume two just out now. How many pages in these books, approximately?
About 220 to 250. I haven't counted them.
Wow, wonderful. All right, and they're full of historical documents and photos.
A lot of photos, too.
Nothing like this. Nothing like this. If we actually had an education system at some of our major universities that taught real history, these books would be instantly pulled in and made part of the curriculum there. No question. There'd be classes on this. This is the truth. Of course, with the agenda, the communist agenda running most of these universities, that would never happen. I'm just saying, in a real world, on a level playing ground, these books would be phenomenal. How many more do you expect to produce?
I don't know. I can't see an end in sight. There's much stuff. I have right now just onto the computer, I got 500 or more chapters that have to be sorted out into some logical order, some semblance of logical order. And we're putting about 15 or 16 chapters in each book. I don't want to overload the thing because nobody's going to read a 400, 500, 600-page-long book.
No.
So,
good. All right.
Photos
so
in there that nobody's seen before.
Plenty ahead. Plenty ahead.
Yeah.
Wow. How exciting. Yeah, you'll make it to 110. Easy.
Oh, I expect to. And that came from a conversation I had with Herbert Werner, the guy who wrote Iron Coffins. He was number 17, I think, of shark hunters. We're up almost 9,000. And, of course, he's passed on. But he and I were having lunch, and somehow the topic came up. I said, I was middle-aged. He says, you're 55. No, you're 50. He's 55. And he says, you think you're going to live to 110? I said, absolutely. He said, well, I'm middle-aged, too. And I said, well, you're 75. You're going to make it to 150? He says, yeah, I think so. Well, unfortunately, he died when he was 94. But
well, he gave it a good shot. That's fair.
Yeah. I'm in better shape now. Thank God. And I mean that sincerely. Thank God I'm in better shape than most 60-year-olds I know.
Well, it's because of the diabetes and the sugar. It keeps you going.
I know. I keep telling myself, put that cupcake down.
No.
And my inner self says, no.
Enjoy that cupcake. You know, if you pass out, you know you've had too much. It's all right. That's how you know.
Well, and also my doctor wasn't raving at me yesterday. My A1C is down still within manageable levels.
Good.
And the only thing I was concerned with was the PSA.
But well, forget the PSA. Forget
okay,
the
I
PSA.
Okay, I forgot it already. But everything else is well within limits. So, you look at my labs, you think you're looking at the labs of a 50-year-old guy because everything is in great shape. Good. I've outlived all my high school friends, or my grade school friends, and lived longer than my folks did, lived longer than my grandparents did.
That's amazing.
My great-great-grandfather's uncle was 93 years old when he ran for the presidency of the United States of America.
Well, you have a mission. You're driven. You have a mission, all right? And that gives you purpose, and purpose gives you life. That's it.
Yeah.
People get older and they have no purpose, and they just float along and they end up going down the drain.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. Way back a million years ago, when I got out of college, I went to work for Motorola as a supervisor, and we had a company newspaper that went out, I think it was every week, and you see in there, oh, Joe Schmo nearing his 30 years with Motorola, and then you see a little while later, Joe Schmo retires, living his golden years in Florida. 3 months later, Joe Schmo's dead.
That's right.
You can't keep working hard your whole life and then suddenly shut it off.
No.
Your body
That's
says,
crazy.
What the hell's going on here?
And then the body shuts down. That's it.
Yeah, it does.
I'm
still
done.
Walk about
That's
five,
it.
6 miles a day.
Well, I think you should drive once in a while in that red Corvette.
I'm sorry to say I haven't turned the key in that thing in 6 months.
What year is it again?
81.
81. All right. It's a C2.
C3.
C3.
C3. C3 runs up until 1982. Then in 1984 starts the C4. 1983, they only made 40-something of them for testing. They squashed all but one of them. And there's only one 1983 Corvette in the whole world, and it's in a museum.
Hmm. Well, the C4 had a good run. That ran for... What, 10, 12 years?
Oh,
long
yeah.
time.
Yeah, the benefits of that thing, you didn't open the hood. The whole front end of the car pivoted
right.
up on the front bumper.
But from the windshield forward.
Yeah. I thought that was about the ugliest of all the Corvettes.
It's cheap. You can pick them up right now, real inexpensively. And as this horrific genocide continues, classic car prices are coming down rapidly. The owners
yeah.
are being killed off. That's exactly what's happening. I'm not exaggerating. And
yeah.
there are going to be a lot of classic cars that can be purchased at half price in the next 6 to 12 months. That's my call.
Well, I'll wait till a 1957 Chevy Bel Air convertible comes up in the news in cherry shape for $1,000. I'll run out and buy it. I don't think that's going to happen anytime
no.
soon.
That car is bulletproof in terms of its value.
It's probably the most collectible of all the old cars. And if it's in cherry shape, you're looking at $150,000.
Well, I had one, and I restored it from bottom to top. And I sold it for $50,000, and that's what I could get for it. That's it. So they made 85,000 of them, and a lot of them are still around, and people are still restoring them.
Yeah.
The convertibles, that's a different story. But the 57 Chevy Bel Air two-door, that's the cat's meow. They call them Tri-5 Chevys, as Harry knows, 55, 56, 57.
Right.
I had a 56 and a 57 once. I just could never keep them. The money was too much money to actually get in and restore them, and you get behind, and anyway. But what a joy to drive. What a beautiful piece of art.
And they all had some kind of little gimmick. The gas cap, for instance, on a 55, you had to press the reflector button on the left rear taillight, and the whole taillight popped up, and there was a gas pipe.
Right.
On the 56s, you had to twist that little piece of chrome, and the taillight lifted. On the 57, you folded over that tall piece of chrome, and there was your gas cap.
Yeah. No,
they had just ugly,
so much imagination.
Econo boxes. Yeah. I love watching stuff like... Adam 12 or stuff like that, because you get to see all them beautiful old cars.
It's true. It's time travel.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Those cars were really gorgeous. Now we have what? EVs, electro vehicle junk, with batteries that love to burn. Norway had to ban all electric vehicles from all of its ships in one of the biggest shipping lines in Norway because the damn things ignite.
How inconvenient. Yeah, you go to change one of them batteries. It's not like pulling a 12-volt battery out and going to Walmart and getting one for $95. They're 11, 12 grand, and they cover the whole underfloor. And if your battery goes dead at the side of the highway, do you walk to the gas station and pick up a bucket full of electricity? And now they were showing they were covering the Miami Boat Show. They got a whole line of electric-powered boats.
Good luck. It's a new world order. World Economic Forum, globalist scam. And the batteries are so difficult on the environment. They're horribly damaging, and it's not worth a crap. And they end up being more expensive by far than a gasoline engine. So, whatever. Anyway, all right. Here, we better get back to business here. All right.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to stay focused.
You're good. 57 Chevrolet.
I'm old and feeble.
50, 56 Chevrolet. 55 Chevrolet. Nice. Mm-hmm. Look for the Bel Air models.
Always.
50 C-11. What are we looking at here? Picture number 3.
C-11.
Tappendienst. What the hell is that? Tappendienst
supply. And this was a chart that I was given about 27 or so years ago by Pizarro. Mm-hmm. And I could translate it. Deep sea graben up at the top, 171 meters. That means a deep sea trench. Then you see Landung, that red X. It says 27 September at 00 hours, which is midnight. Then down underneath that, you see Treffpunkt. That means meeting point. And that was Group Sargo. That was a group of agents. And it was 27 September 1945, and this was at 3:30 in the morning. And then you see over on the left, Puerto Madryn, the German cruiser Schlesien visited there in 1938. But all the rest of this stuff was going on September of 1945. So I got a call from our agent, Peter Parker. And we expanded that map looking at it today from Google, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're putting all this into the next issue of our magazine that should be ready in about 2-3 weeks.
Approximately where is that?
That is in the Gulf of San Matias, which is a few hundred miles, a couple hundred miles south of Buenos Aires. Let me walk over here to my big wall map so I can keep track of this stuff. There's Golfo San Matias. Oh, it's quite a ways south, yeah. It's about halfway between...
Is it below Bariloche?
Oh, no, Bariloche is way west. But it's okay. About directionally, almost directly across the country from Golfo San Matias to Bariloche.
That's what I was trying to get at. Okay,
yeah, you're right. And there's a reason for it. But Gulf of San Matias is about halfway between Buenos Aires and the bottom of Argentina, the Tierra del Fuego. And this is where so much stuff was coming in when we expanded the current map. Agent Peter Parker pointed out where the farthest northeastern point was, where the signals were flashed, whether it's safe to come in or not. And the old airstrips are still there, if you know where to Google in on them. They're still there.
Wow.
And, you know, that's some place that would be good for research, but only if you've got quite some time, because it's probably all grown over. And the one place that was the point where they flashed the go or no go, that's now government owned. I don't know if it's government or Army or Navy or who knows.
What planes were flying in there, Harry?
Those were mostly based in that area. They had the JU-52s, the old tri-motor.
Right.
They had them all over South America because they had started with the airmail route.
Uh-huh.
And the big planes would bring the mail into a distribution point, and then the smaller JU-52s would take them and run out to other places. We've got pictures galore with JU-52s and the black cross on the side and the swastika on the tail. And there was one about, 20 years ago, I guess. There was one still flying freight, and the guy called it Iron Annie. And Lufthansa bought it and refurbished it, except for they had to have modern engines and modern avionics, but they refurbished the interior just like a 1936 airliner. If you can call something like that an airliner, but that was big in the day. And they brought it around the U.S. For PR. And I don't know how or why, but I was invited to fly along on that airplane. So I drove up to Tallahassee, hopped aboard and in the back, and we flew around for about an hour. Hell of a nice airplane. It never flew above about 2,000 feet. Get a little hot inside because they're all metal. You open the window, get a breeze in there. Hell of a nice airplane.
So there were Ju-52s, a lot of them in Argentina. That's what you're saying. How did they get them down there? By ship?
By ship. Before the war.
Fascinating.
That was part, I think it was about 1929 or so when Germany was getting the airmail routes going down there. Right. And Peter Parker sent me all sorts of data on that, films, photos.
All right, real quick, back to the picture number three.
Yeah.
Before we break here, is that an actual replica of what was original?
Yeah, that was an original chart, and Pizarro put the arrows and stuff on it.
Got it. Fascinating. And the submarine was, after the war, still operational, and it was coming in there in September of 45.
Right.
Wow. All right.
And when we go on a close-up there by where it says Landung, which is the landing point, and the truck pump, the meeting point, the water there is about, I think we saw it, it was about 20 meters deep, that's 60 feet, so plenty of operating room.
And we don't have any idea what the submarine was doing there at that meeting at that time?
Yes, maybe. I don't know. My good friend Ingrid Scharfenberg, who was murdered some years ago, and she was very well connected in this because she knew Hitler. She owned the hotel. Literally, a good NFL quarterback could throw a football from her hotel to the Berghof.
Well, that was the hotel Zum Turken. And that's a whole other story, which you can find in our past visits. So someday when some of you are listening to this and you're saying, well, what's that? You can go back and listen. It's all covered. We've covered it all, a lot of it anyway. All right, stand by. We have to pause.
Go ahead, pause.
All right, we will pause. Now finish your last sentence. Go on.
I was going to say all the shows with me and Jeff Rentz are on my website, sharkhunters.com. They're all free. Go up to the top menu, and it says radio appearances. They're all there from February of 2013. 10 years ago this month.
Wow. Well,
time flies when you're having fun.
Well, yes, indeed. All right, and we'll be right back with Harry. In just a few minutes, hold on.